The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora, I'm Anton Bentley, host of Art for Art's Sake. And today I'm talking with globe-trotting comedy sensation Randy Feltface, ahead of the New Zealand leg of his Feltopia World Tour. Welcome, Randy, and thanks for taking time out of your hectic schedule to talk with me today.
Thank you so much for having me on the program. I very much appreciate it.
I've been looking forward to this interview for quite some time.
Okay, the pressure's on. Let's go.
Oh, no pressure. Now, you're performing at the Theatre Royal in Nelson on Thursday the 10th of August. Is this going to be your first time in Nelson, or have you been here before?
This will be my first time performing in Nelson. I'm pretty sure I've been to Nelson. I lived in Auckland for a few months back in like the year, I want to say 2001.
Yeah.
And I traveled around quite a lot at that time. I'm pretty sure I made it to Nelson. But this is my debut performance. What can I expect from the Nelson audience?
I think Nelsonians are going to love you. And in fact, one of my good friend Judine said, "Oh, Randy's coming, great, I want to see him." So I'll be there with her that night, certainly having a great time, I'm sure.
Well, if you and Judine want to bring along 300 or so of your closest friends, that would really help. Yeah, I would love that.
We'll narrow it down to 300. Now, I suppose one of the things I'm really curious is about is you hear stories about comedians and how they got into comedy and they were, bullied in school and that kind of thing. How did you first find your voice as a comedian?
I sort of came to it more from a performer point of view. I was doing a lot of theater and a lot of, different sort of alternative sketch stuff.
Yeah.
And then stand-up was something that I just kind of wanted to try out and see how it landed. I was always a huge comedy nerd. I loved going to see stand-up comedy. It was always kind of a thing that I was into as a kid. And I just had an opportunity to write some stand-up for a kind of cabaret night style show, and it just really locked in, and then from there I got obsessed and just kept doing it. That was 18 years ago now, so yeah, mine came more from a performance background into telling jokes.
Right. So your first full-length show was at the Melbourne Comedy Festival back in about 2009, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
How did you go from that to becoming the globe-trotting phenomenon that you are in such a short time?
By sacrificing every other part of my life to just stay on the road and keep touring. I think it's about, like, I love it so much. I love writing new shows. I love touring. I love doing the festivals and stuff. So I think it's just about consistency. And also, I've just been really lucky that the shows that I've put online on YouTube and different things have kind of managed to find a little audience, so I can tour around the world and sell enough tickets to justify the lifestyle. So yeah, it's sort of one part luck, one part running away from who I really am.
Right. And a lot of sacrifice of a personal life, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's all my choices. Nobody's got a cannon to my head to keep me on the road. So I'm very happy with the choices I've made. It's just the lifestyle doesn't really lend itself to any kind of, I don't know, stability or consistency.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Now, the first time you went to the Edinburgh Fringe, you were nominated for Best Comedy, and you recently went back to Edinburgh Fringe. What was it like going back? Was it a different experience for you that time, or...?
It was actually, it had been 6 years since I went back, and it was pretty amazing to go back with a show after having sort of changed the way that I operate after 6 years. The first bunch of festivals, the first few times I went to Edinburgh, it was an absolute party, you know what I mean? Like,
yep.
I was still kind of drinking in those days, and I was, it was a wild time in my late 20s and early 30s. But this time, I think it was really just like summer camp was over. I was there to work. I did a lot of shows. I really loved doing the shows. They're some of the best audiences in the world. And, it was just a really lovely time. I was doing a lot more wholesome things, like walking up Arthur's Seat every day and having nice cups of tea and then keeping myself nice for the shows, as opposed to the early days where it would be, shots before shows and then 12 gigs every night and, no sleep, that kind of vibe. I can't do that anymore.
Age creeps up on all of us, I'm afraid.
Yeah. I'm welcoming it with open arms. I'm pretty happy with it, to be honest.
Well, that's one of us. That's great.
Well, I'm just fascinated that I made it this far, to be honest. Like, it's considering the punishment of the early days, it's pretty good to be still kicking around and being able to travel and do what I do.
Yeah. Now, you made your American TV debut back in, I think it was it about 2009 on Bringing the Funny?
Bring the Funny. I think it was 2019, actually. It was 2019. Much more recent. Yeah.
Oh, I think that's me with a bad typo, I think. Now, what do the Americans make of you? Because they're, I would imagine, a very different kind of audience than you would get in Australia or Edinburgh or...
Yeah, they're actually a super generous comedy audience. I love American audiences because I think every town, every city in America has a comedy club, and there's a real culture of going to comedy and people know how to behave as an audience in a comedy club, and it's just really interwoven in the culture there. So if you get points for showing up, and then if you can win a crowd over, it's some of the most explosive, energetic crowds I've ever played to. They're really fun. I mean, also, again, because I've kind of had this opportunity to build an audience online, I did a little bit of schlepping around the US before people started to know who I was. But now that that audience is building online, some of the work's already done for me. So I think I'm probably a little bit biased because people are coming to see me who are already familiar with the style of comedy that I'm churning out. So I'm not having to really win over crowds in backward cities in the middle of America. You know, I don't have to win over all the red states. I'm pretty... my crowd's already found me, if that makes sense. So I'm spoiled. I'm spoiled rotten in the US.
Yeah, and that's the great things with things like YouTube and TikTok and so on, is that if you go, who is this guy, you can look it up and go, gosh, that's really funny, I want to go to the show, rather than who's the son, no one, do I want to take a risk? So,
yeah, but that being said, you know, the first shows I did in America on the road were these shows called Comedy Confidential shows at this string of clubs called Helium, where you would turn up and the audience wouldn't know who was on the lineup. It was just like a Wednesday or a Thursday night, and there would be a feature act that would do 20 minutes, a host would do like 10 at the top, and then the headliner would do like 50 to 60 minutes. And I was headlining those shows, and so you have like a minute to win the audience over. They have no idea what to expect, and suddenly my little face pops up, this Australian purple goggle-eyed little guy, and to their credit, like, and you know, like, they got on board straight away, and they really ran with it. So while I have had the benefit of having a lot of crowds having already found me, it's still nice to know that I can jump in the deep end in front of a bunch of strangers and hopefully win them over.
Do you ever have those experiences when you're performing where you get maybe hecklers and things like that, and how do you deal with them?
I don't mind hecklers if they're kind of constructive. Sometimes you get the best heckles. I recently did a show in Brooklyn where I was talking about the fact that I was Australian and that I wasn't from America, and a woman in the audience yelled out, "I'll marry you for a green card."
Ah.
And then another person heckled, "I'm a minister." So I got the minister and the heckler on stage and started doing a live wedding. And then right before I said I do, someone else in the audience heckled that they objected. So then I got them up and we married as a thruple. So sometimes those moments, you just can't, you could never write that, you can never construct that. So sometimes heckling is brilliant. The only heckling I don't really like is when it's someone who's usually drunk and trying to make themselves more interesting than the show.
Yeah.
And then, because that tends to throw the whole room off. But if someone throws something in that I can use and weave into the show and everybody's experiencing something for the first time, I think there's a lot of magic in that. I'm not really one to... You know, I prefer people to feel liberated enough to vocalize something if they think it's funny and they think it's going to help the show. But, yeah, it's also my job to shut people down, I guess, if they're being disruptive. So there is always fun in that as well.
I can imagine. Now, I heard you had real trouble getting a visa when you first went to the States.
Yeah. There's I've had a few different O-1s over the years. The O-1 is the Alien of Extraordinary Ability visa. But yeah, there's been a few times that I've come pretty close to not making it over there. Is that a particular story you're referring to? Have I spoken about this in another interview, or is that just a common?
I do recall hearing about it somewhere along the line, and obviously that inspired the show Alien of Extraordinary Ability.
Alien of Extraordinary Ability is actually all about the fact that there's only one of me left. I'm a critically endangered species. And so that show was all about, you know, protecting myself and the other endangered species on the planet. But this is the trouble with constantly changing your own backstory. Sometimes stories come back to bite you. I often will make stuff up in interviews. Not this one. I'm being very honest in this one. This is a very nice interview.
I'll
run off on some tangents. So probably at some point I said I was getting my visa cancelled and everybody laughed, and then it became, you know, part of the canon.
Well, speaking of being an endangered species, do you experience any discrimination against you as a puppet in what is a fiercely competitive industry?
So far, not really. I think in some respects it works to my advantage, you know, because I have a little bit of a point of difference. But there is sometimes I have trouble being taken seriously, you know. Sometimes if I actually want to make a request or make some demands, people don't tend to take me seriously because of the way I look. But, you know, I just keep on working, and I'm in it for the giggles. So hopefully that's infectious, and I'm not really doing this so that, you know, I'm doing this to avoid having to have a real job, let's be honest.
Best reason to do anything, I think.
Yeah.
Now, over the years, you've paired up with people like Sammy J with DVDs and TVs and TV and live shows and things. How did that collaboration come about with Sammy J?
Well, Sammy and I actually met on the comedy circuit. We were both he started out maybe a year and a bit before I did, but we were both knocking around Melbourne in Victoria around the same time, and we ended up on a couple of the same lineups. And one particular show was this sort of late night cabaret show called The Wrong Night, where you had to do your like wrongest material. And Sammy was hosting that with a piano, and I was on the lineup, and I roped him in during my set to start doing some accompaniment. That's a tough word to say at this time of the day. I got him on board to kind of vamp on the piano while I was doing my comedy, and it just turned into this little improvised gold mine. And then we started working together, and the rest is history. We did 10, you know, bunch of shows together over 10 years or so, and a TV show and all sorts of stuff. So he and I are still very good friends. We'll definitely do some stuff again in the future, but I like writing with other people, and I loved having a double act, but it's a little bit solitary and lonely on the road these days.
That actually leads me to what I was wanting to ask you about next, and we've sort of touched on it a bit earlier on, which is with such a grueling schedule with touring and that kind of thing, how do you manage to balance your professional and private life?
It's a really good question, and to be honest, I'm sort of grappling with that at the moment because I've just done 2 years of very intense touring, and the last 5 months in particular, I did 100 shows in about 4.5 months.
Whoa.
Around the world. Yeah, it was crazy. So it's that thing where I'm hoping that the style of touring that I'm doing is certainly not sustainable, but it's a means to an end. You know, like I'm attempting to build an audience so that I can do less shows in bigger venues, you know, spread out over more time. But that's always the dream. But that being said, I really love it. I really love being on the road. I love going to new places. I'm happy to play to between, you know, 5,000 people. It doesn't really matter as long as I'm kind of still enjoying the performance side of it. And when I get sick of that, I imagine I'll probably start doing something else.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So what do you do in those rare moments of downtime? How do you relax?
Well, I like sort of, I'm in the bird noticing community these days. So I travel with a pair of binoculars, and everywhere I go, I try to find the green space and wander out with my binoculars and see what's going on. I like to go for walks. I like to read. I've been like, you know, I like a swim, things like that.
Yeah.
Just anything sort of mildly meditative that is, you know, counteracts the hectic pace of planes, hotel, comedy club, you know, Uber, plane, hotel, comedy club. It's just trying to do that sort of thing. And that kind of keeps me honest, you know.
Fantastic. Now, just a last real question, I guess, is you've been described as a philosopher puppet, and your latest show, Feltopia, is about politics. What sort of social commentary can we expect from the show?
Great question. This show is sort of a reflection on where we've got to as far as accountability in the arts and accountability in politics, as you know, in the way that where the checks and balances are with what's happening to the environment and what decisions that people in power are making. And also, I think there's a lot about my own personal kind of my own personal trip at the moment, as far as where I'm at, exactly what I said in terms of the existentialism of being being a touring comedian and trying to keep my feet on the ground. I mean, that sounds like the shittest pitch ever. There's a much better way for me to say that. But the show is about the distance between cause and effect.
Okay.
What we do in our everyday life, how that affects the people and the things around us, and how long it might take for the effects of our actions to actually take effect. Does that make sense?
It does indeed. And I've got to say, I really like a good comedy show that's got a bit of a message and some things to think about there as
Amazing.
Well. So that's fantastic. So for the listeners at home, Randy Feltface, Feltopia World Tour will be at the Theatre Royal, Nelson, Thursday the 10th of August, and bookings can be made at www.theatreroyalnelson.co.nz.
So, thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, sadly, that's all the time we've got today. Thanks for joining me, Randy, and all the best for the tour.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me. I'll see you later.
Thank you.
Bye.
Right, bye.
Bye.
I'm Anton Bentley. You've been listening to Art for Art's Sake on Fresh FM, broadcasting across the top of the South. You can catch up on all our programs online or wherever you get your podcasts.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM, with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.